This week on RSVB Update, we have spellbook swap changes, patch notes, and another look at the Comp Cape rework, as well as Onyx and a potential Stone Spirit rework. Plus thoughts on player support and cloud gaming. This is RSVB Update, episode 716, recorded Thursday, March 21st, 2019. A new way to play. Hello, everybody, and thank you for joining us once again for another episode of RSVB Update. Just Tannis and myself joining you guys this week for this very thin episode, let's just say.
You know, sometimes you just want a little hors d'oeuvre. Sometimes you need a meal. I think this week we just need to just nibble on some stuff.
That's right. That's right. And, you know, we'll talk more about nibbling later. It's actually very apt for this week. And, you know, this week was supposed to be the fire-making update. But, you know, we talked last week how last week's game update was certainly interesting, and then it just kept piling on from there in after about that, so much so that we actually have to circle back and update a few of the things that we talked about last week. So that's gonna take up a bit of time this week, but nonetheless, I think we hit the right note last week, and we have some follow-ups on that. So let's just drive right in this week. The biggest thing that we want to highlight from this week's update is, of course, the changes to spellbook swap. You ever use spellbook swap?
I don't, but I probably should, just because there are times when I need to change my spellbook, but I usually will just go to Kadan and do it. But it would be so much better if I was just doing a one use thing. But I'm not that, you know, I'm not an elite PVMer that's going to be using that all the time.
Right.
You know, if I was using it, it would be so that I could get closer to the patch in Trollheim instead of, you know, down the road a little bit.
Yeah. So here's the thing. What they did with this is that new spells have been added to both the Ancient and Lunar spellbooks that facilitate direct swapping to a different spellbook. And the idea behind this is that you can press this and you will be able to then cast one spell from within that spellbook without needing to open up a UI. And, you know, if you're doing this for skilling, you know, to teleport to Trollheim or something, like you mentioned, it's really not that big of a deal. But when it comes down to it, if you're doing combat and you are on, say, your ancient magics, right? Let's just say you're doing that and you want to swap back over to the standard spellbook to cast Vulnerability. Well, you would previously need to click spellbook swap and then choose the standard book. But now you can just directly swap to that. And, you know, this is very much a PVM update. I must say so. So much so that I don't know in what case, aside from convenience, that this would really improve efficiency of standard RuneScape players, because I mean, if let's be real, if you're skilling, you're not going to be too fussed about needing to click that other button, right? So
yeah.
Now, with that being said, I did ask David about this, our resident PVM expert, on what he had to say about this and how it was going to impact the PVM side of the equation. He basically told me that when it comes to PVMing and when it comes to things that could be changed for PVM, this is probably an 8 or a 9 on the level of impactfulness that this will see. And it's something that is interacted with in pretty much every PVM fight that he does, and it's a huge usability update for that crowd. And he says with this, the only thing that's really holding him back is he would like more action bars. So spellbook swap is a pretty big thing for PVM types, and you can now click once directly and swap directly to that book. So I don't know that I have much else to say on that, except it's going to be a pretty, pretty big deal.
Yeah, and I, you know, I await the day when it applies to me.
Yeah.
and I can actually, you know, do something with it. Although I'm not going to overlook it for the teleports, because I do use those from Lunar Book, and it is harder to switch now ever since my Wicked Pouch doesn't work for some reason. I haven't figured out why, but so I always have to go, like I said, to the Kadan altar thing. So yeah, switch them up, teleport around.
Huh,
for skillers anyway, right?
You know? Yeah, I don't know what would be wrong with your Wicked Pouch, but
I don't know. It quit working like a year ago, and I never took the time to figure out why.
Hmm. All right. Yeah. Well, let's go into the patch notes then, because I imagine we'll see more of these there, and everybody, of course, wants to hear about the comp cape again. So starting off with this, voiceover has been added to the Magister boss fight. I'm assuming what this is basically – adding a bit more personality to the boss fight, kind of in the vein of Solak or something like that. Some changes for the bounty hunter removal that we saw last week removed from the game. The Revenant Spirit Pet item will now appear with a loot beam when it's dropped.
Oh, I hope someone didn't miss out on that.
Especially in the wilderness of all places.
Man. And it's really rare. Like, it's more rare than a lot of other pets. Oh, man.
Yep.
Oh.
Mandrith's location has been added to the Slayer Skill Cape's teleport options. So this is another reason to add the Slayer Cape as one of your perks on your max cape, is that you can have a quick and easy teleport to Edgeville now.
Oh, cool.
It's no longer possible to get a social slayer task from Mandrith if your partner doesn't meet his combat requirements. Okay, that's good, as should be the case with most slayer tasks. Adrenaline crystals dropped from the wilderness rare loot table are now noted. Chat-wise, corrected the flag shown on the friends chat and clan chat interfaces on non-English worlds. Not sure what they were displaying before, because I don't really see much of the non-English world, so that's an interesting one to me. In the combat zone, added a missing apostrophe and concentrated blast description, added new spells to both the Lunar and Ancient spellbooks to allow direct casting to a spellbook, i.e. spellbook swap standard, and the existing spellbook swap spell has not been removed. We just talked about that. Now, another big one with this spellbook swap business is that it can now be used off a global cooldown from the action bar. So if you're on your global cooldown, you can fire off that spellbook swap and get into that book right away, even if you just activated another ability. So this further moves RuneScape towards the realm of hair trigger combat reactions.
Yeah, I wonder if that's going to...
It's going to make people more efficient, I think.
Yeah, no, it's definitely going to do that. I just wonder how much more, because that'll be interesting. I'm anxious to see how it turns out.
Yeah. Blackstone arrows are now consumed as expected with the Tyrannan Quiver. Blackstone arrows will now correctly deplete, rather, in PvP. They weren't before. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Now on to other changes this week. They added a UI customization section of the general gameplay settings that will allow the user to toggle the display of the summoning globe between summoning points and familiar special points. This is wonderful, because for those of you guys unaware out there, if you click that tiny, tiny, tiny narrow bar that shows your summoning points, it will convert to familiar points, and there's really nothing that says that that's going to be happening. So it's nice that they've actually added in a way of making this an official option in the game rather than just stumbling upon it and needing to run your mouse over that narrow bar. I remember complaining about that when that update first hit.
Yeah, this is nice. This is definitely nice.
And with this, I'm wondering if they should actually remove the ability to click on the bar and change it. Because I'm of the opinion that if you have settings for a game or an operating system or whatever it might be, they should only be accessible from one place to change them.
Well, I don't know. I mean, I tend to agree with you. I just don't know how it would be received.
I wonder how many people actually toggle between them using the bar. That would be a good question, I think, to ask in this case.
Yeah, because the only time I can think that it would be maybe real important is if you're using a Titan and you need to replenish their specials. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I don't know. That's just a minor UI niggle. The huge urn option on the Ring of Urns has now returned from its holiday and is now taking its rightful place as a transmogrification option. As well, the Ring of Trees and the Ring of Coins can now be accessed via the transmogrification interface if they've been added to your player-owned house storage. So, cleaning up some loose ends from that last week. Skilling-wise, Grace of the Elves will now show a debuff when deactivated and the buff when active to help distinguish what state it's in.
I guess that's good. I'm blind, and I kind of didn't have a problem keeping up with that. So,
I don't necessarily think it's a debuff when it's deactivated, so I'm not sure that they should have done that. I think what should have happened in this case is that just have it appear as a buff when it's active, but if it's not active, just don't have anything appear. That's the way I would handle that. Because when you think about, you're wearing a Grace of the Elves, but you don't have the porters enabled, is that really a debuff?
No, and that's... Yeah, that... I didn't have a problem knowing when mine was on and off, and if someone was going to, it would probably be me.
And of course, for listeners just joining us, Tanis uses a screen magnifier, so only sees parts of the screen at a time.
Yeah,
it's blank.
Yeah.
So, yeah. A full stamina bar will no longer be displayed if enabled among the player's head when they start to mine a node which does not deplete stamina, such as crablets or sandstone.
Okay.
Added missing smithing sounds to the anvils in Dungeoneering. And...
ha ha ha! Yes.
Oh, okay.
Yes. Yeah, I mean, I haven't done a lot of Dungeoneering, but those sounds, man, they're important. Like, that's good. That's a really good little... catch note there.
Yeah, and we talked about that with the mining and smithing rework, just how important they are. So I wonder, do you know, have any idea how long they were gone or missing, or were they never there? Or?
I'm guessing they must not have been there. But I don't know.
And then I must make an obligatory mention to the fact that this hotfix from last week regarding uncut onyxes being no longer obtainable from Priftina's gem mining has made its way into this patch notes here.
Yeah, I saw that. Does that make it official or something? Like, fix now or something? Like, I don't know. I saw that too. I'm like, huh. All right.
And finally, the reward shop benefit with the Garasian Trailblazer outfit no longer requires you to wear the outfit to get the reward shop discounts or skip floors, provided you own the outfit. So you don't need to. So they move that to passive benefit.
That's cool. Mm-hmm. I love the passives.
Yeah.
My favorites.
Yeah, we talked about that with the comp cape. but that's it for patch notes this week. Pretty slim. So,
yeah.
I mean, not too much to write home about there, except for the spellbook swap if you're a PVM type. And I think we also need to... just talk about how we were highlighting the various changes with the summoning toggle as well as the Grace of the Elves. I see those two as kind of questionable UI decisions, but that's just me.
Yeah, I'm not real big on the...
Like, I'm not saying
the
option is bad.
Change,
I'm just saying that it doesn't make sense to have it as a debuff, and in regards to summoning... let's just have it accessible only from one spot. That way it's a proper setting.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. I'm a little more forgiving on summoning because you might need to do it really quickly. Do it from the bar, but I totally agree on the Grace of the Elves.
All right. Then this week, we also got a post entitled "A Message from Player Support." This struck me as a little bit odd when I first saw this. You?
When I saw it, I thought, "Oh, there must be like they're either going to do some service like server maintenance or something like that, but it wasn't that at all. So, yeah.
Yeah, so they say this is a subject that has been discussed a lot over the past few weeks, and that in particular, JAGEX customer support. And they want to outline the status of support in the areas that that players want additional support with. Now, these are some of the points that have been made from within the community. And after we get to the end here, we'll circle back and talk about why this is interesting. Now, in regards to account security and recovery, they say many comments have been suggesting that our account security is not as effective as it needs to be, and the systems we have in place, such as the authenticator, are not doing enough to protect against things such as account hijacking. There's also frustration with a lack of the lost items policy outside of extreme circumstances, and account recovery difficulties are being encountered. You know, point number two has always been an issue with customer support going back as far as I can remember.
Yeah. And
in regards to lost items.
Right. Yeah. No, that's true. But, you know, I have to trust what JAGEX is saying because they have the numbers.
Yeah.
But I still have a hard time figuring out how people are being hijacked with Authenticator.
Yeah.
How does that happen? Someone would have to steal your phone.
Yeah. And, you know, what I'm imagining is people don't use Authenticator. I think that's the core of the problem. I really think that's what it is.
It's got to be because it shouldn't. I don't know. I'm not as, you know, as knowledgeable as you are when it comes to the nuts and bolts of how things work like this, but I just can't figure out a way that you would be getting hacked all the time if you're using Authenticator. It just doesn't make any sense to me.
Yeah. Last July, we actually did one of our weekly bites on this subject, and, you know, I showed how to enable Authenticator if you have a smartphone. I also showed how to enable Authenticator if you don't have a smartphone and you're on Windows. So in general, I think there's no reason why anybody who doesn't have a Windows computer should have no reason of not having Authenticator enabled, so to speak.
Yeah, no.
It's a free open source application called WinAuth. All you do is you download it, you set up a new Google authentication device because that's the protocol that's in use. And when JAGEX asks you to turn on Authenticator, you can either scan a QR code, which is one of those little grid-type picture-y things, or there's an option that says can't scan the code. You just click that, and you're presented with a long alphanumeric key. And you can just copy and paste that into the WinAuth app as a Google authenticator. And after that, you just enter in the 6-digit number that it gives you, and Authenticator is enabled. And this is a very, very simple thing to do. So I'm thinking the people who get their account hijacked don't have Authenticator enabled. Because if you have Authenticator enabled, providing you didn't, A, give away your QR code or give away your phone, you should have no problem with this. Or maybe you had a hijacked email account. I don't know. Because that could be another way in disabling it. So.
Oh, yeah, because then you could go in and just turn it off.
Yeah.
Huh?
Yeah. And, I mean, it needs to be a pyramid. My email is also on 2-factor authentication, as is the RuneScape account that goes to that email. So it's a nice nested triangle, so to speak. Customer support wise, apparently people believe the only way to contact customer support is via Reddit and Twitter.
Well, now, you know, that's not entirely their fault.
No, it's not. And I think we know why.
Yeah.
It's a reliance on both those platforms for everything else that's make people think that, oh, maybe I should just go to Reddit or Twitter for this.
Well, and I mean, who knows? I might be getting quicker reaction times. I mean, I don't know that.
Yeah, we don't know that.
Yeah.
Also, a desire for more effective direct communication channels, and that the support center is a maze of frequently asked questions. And then in regards to anti-cheating, it feels like there are too many bots in some areas of the game.
We'll have to wait a day or two, but I have an article that I think is going to be touching on this a little bit because I 100% completely disagree unless you're talking about OSRS. If that's what they're talking about, then yes, that's 100% true, but not in RS3.
Yeah,
and I will die on that hill, man. I'm telling you, there is not an abundance of bots. Then again, maybe it's because I come from a perspective of I remember the bot epidemic, and it's not like that. Yeah. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like it's just not
totally different. Also, there's a perception that some bans are unfair or false. For example, bans applied when an account is hijacked. So they say over the coming weeks and months, we want to build on the areas above and build an understanding of what the main issues are for all players, not only those active on social media. And to demonstrate Jagex's commitment, there's three things that they aim to do this year. One, continually survey all players, rather than just those on Reddit or Twitter, to understand what you think is important from a customer support perspective. We'll use this to inform our priorities and measure our progress. A series of detailed blogs on these topics will outline plans including upgrading our systems, account security, recovery and lost items, challenging the myths about customer support, and toxicity in-game, of all things.
Toxicity in-game? Well, not saying it doesn't exist. Go to a portable world, right. You'll see it. But I don't know. I mean, are we just – am I in a bubble, Shane, that I'm not seeing that?
I feel like I might be in a bubble too if that's the case as well because I don't see that either.
Yeah.
Because my frequented areas in-game over the past month or so have been Prif, the Artisan's Workshop, the player-owned farm, and my farming runs.
Yeah, I mean, you know what? That's pretty much where I've been too. I mean, I've done a little more Slayer and stuff like that, but – I mean, I feel like most of your chat is with your clan or your friends' chat, so I don't really notice a lot of, you know, just toxic comments. But that's another one of those questions. Are we talking RS3 or are we talking other game?
Well, this is posted all on the RS3 thread.
RS3. They're saying that there's toxicity in RS3. Yeah. I don't see that either. Yeah. I mean, and it used to be, don't get me wrong. Like I remember like, you know, I mean, I remember my first day was like, whoa, but I never paid much attention to it. It just never really bothered me all that much. I mean, seriously, like does toxicity on any online game really bother you that much? I mean, I always have thought of it as like some 14-year-old kid behind a keyboard. He ain't intimidating me. You know what I mean? Like, say what you want, dude. Did you just learn how to cuss? All right. Good job, buddy. You got it in context. Keep trying. Like, it just never really bugged me that much.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I don't know. I don't know. In any case, it then gets a little bit more odd with this saying, we won't promise the moon and deliver an orange. Have you ever heard that statement before?
Never. So is it a British thing? Because I've never heard that.
I have no idea. And anyways, you know, they say there's been significant work done, and the reality is that many of their systems are bespoke, meaning, of course, built internally, and that they also face legacy issues with this. And in 2019, this is an area of investment, and they say this is our problem, not yours, and we want you to understand the situation, then hopefully see why some of the support you currently receive isn't as good as it needs to be. Please do understand that we are changing that. And to be totally honest, there are no quick fixes, and these issues will take time to tackle, and they will be hosting a big questions Q&A next week, during which, among other topics, your questions relating to this blog will be put to the team.
Well, that's good. I mean, that's, I think, probably the most important statement of the whole thing. At least we know they're listening, and that's, you know, that's important.
Yeah. So, you know, I think when it comes down to it, at the end of the day, the reason this post came out, is that this seems to be an effort to get ahead of perhaps a community problem that may or may not exist, because, you know, we don't go through the account support system here, right? You and I can't remember the last time I had to do that.
No. Yeah.
So I think the reason we're seeing this is because we've said this before, is that when it comes down to it, many times the vocal complainers do tend to draw more attention than the people who are just going along happily. And because of that, and especially given recent situations with, say, the gem rework or the comp cape, it's going to just kind of inflame the situation a bit. And a reaction that could be spurred by the comp cape or the gem rework might, in effect, then be taken out on customer support. Though they say this was going back many months. But with that being said, things like this can manifest themselves rather quickly.
Well, and that makes me wonder, like, see, when you say that, those specific things don't strike me as support issues. Like, when I think of support, I think I can't log in.
Right.
Or, you know what I mean? Like, or, oh, there's something broken and I'm stuck. Like, I don't know. I never – that's kind of what I think when I think support, or, like, my game is, you know, stuck, or it's the lag is so bad I can't – you know, what can I do? I never think of it as like a, you know, an actual content, you know, being mad about and asking about that. I don't know.
Yeah, that's right. Now, with that being said, I think this is a perfectly legit thing to discuss. And, you know, when it comes down to it, at the end of the day, what we have here is, in effect, a good step forward by, let's just say, the PR department. I don't know if that department exists, to try and smooth things over with the player. Because, you know, you read this post and you saw something completely different than I did, and you didn't understand why they were making this post, right?
Yeah.
Well, I saw this as an attempt to get ahead of anything that could be manifested by the changes last week that might have an impact on player support. And if this has nothing to do with the Gem Rocks and the Comp Cape rework, the very fact that there is a conciliatory tone coming out of a news post on the front page is a good thing for the company.
Yeah, that's good. I just, you know, I never connected, like I said, I've never connected actual content development with player support.
Right.
Like, I just didn't make that connection to me. Mm-hmm. So I didn't, you know, I thought it was great. Oh, you know, good. We're being informed of what's going on, but I didn't particularly think it was like a really big deal. So yeah, that's kind of why I just never, you know, I just never connected those two things.
Yeah. All right. I think we can move on to talk again about the comp cape.
Well, if you're right, then maybe there's hope that we're going to get a comp cape rework, which I really didn't think we were going to.
Yeah.
I really didn't think that's going to happen, but...
So on Friday after we recorded this on Thursday last week, and, you know, that's why at the start of each show we say recorded on X date, because we don't want to put out a show and have someone listen to it 3 or 4 days later and think that it's current. We want it to be as precise as we can make it. So the changes in a TLDR posted on the news page last Friday say that you've shown your passion and appreciation for keeping the current appearances of the Max Quest and Master Quest capes. We talked about that on the show, didn't we?
Mm-hmm.
We're keeping their appearances in game with the following tweaks to the overall design. The Max cape and Tier 1 skill cape, or skill Tier 1 cape rather, will be separate capes. The Max cape is staying currently as it is. Visually, we're not changing it, and it will still be recolorable. The skills T1 cape requirements may have things outside the remit of just having 99 stats in that skill. Or in having 99 stats across the board.
Uh-huh.
Now, what else could they... What could they put in there with that? I mean...
120th. That you need to have. So true max. So I'm guessing that's going to hold like the 120 Dungeoneering, 120 Slayer, and 120 Invention, because that's those skills actually legitimately go to that. But you get the max cape at 99. So that would be
what about
my
adding
take.
The skilling? And then I guess you would add the skilling achievements to a tier 2 or tier 3 skill cape.
That's what I would think.
Okay.
But, I mean, I'm not,
we'll read on then, because we're going to go into the design again. The Quest and Master Quest cape appearances are staying in the game, and we'll either bring them into the new system so that they become lore tier 1 and lore tier 3 capes, although they'll probably keep their current names. And as we said on the show last week, that's a good idea. Running out a design with lore tier 1, lore tier 3, skill tier 1, without providing a tangible linkage as to what the designs would be for the players isn't a good idea. So good that change has been made. And
I know a lot of our suggestions seem to
and
made their way.
I mean, they're common sense. That's because they're common sense, and it's all about refining the existing design, even though if nothing has actually changed. And we'll see if that is what happened. And then they say, or we'll make new tier 1 lore, tier 2 lore, and tier 3 capes. If you've unlocked the tier 1 and tier 3 lore capes, you'll unlock the current visuals of the quest and master quest capes as cosmetic overrides. That's another option.
Okay.
You've also shown us that having stats on any of the tier 1 achievements is too different from and too different or too lenient in comparison to how comp currently is. As a result, we've tweaked the tier 1 benefits. The passive stats will only exist on the tier 1 combat cape or be split between the tier 1 and tier 2, depending where certain boss requirements sit. And we're also looking forward to adding some kind of benefit for the skills tier 1 and lore tier 1 capes.
Yeah.
So
I don't know. In my opinion, then, what's the purpose of a tier 1 combat cape?
Right.
It's only something you get on your way to the actual comp cape. And so you didn't really do anything besides separate combat out of comp.
And I'm gonna highlight my suggestion again that there should be no stats. These should all be cosmetic overrides, and the best in slot combat capes should come from some kind of combat activity in game. Now, going through the changes of this doc, one thing that was changed, the third big problem is that some players don't like specific requirements like Reaper and Castle Wars. Reaper has two closely related issues. It adds both hard PVM content and forced group content as requirements, which locks players out who can't or won't do these. We'll need to decide whether or not these requirements do belong on comp and what it means for the game. So that is up for discussion.
Yeah. You know, and that to me is probably the hardest question, because I can really see both sides of that argument. Personally, I think they should be separate, but I totally understand the argument of that it's part of the game, and in order to complete it, you have to do it. That being said, I don't think you should ever have to be forced into a group situation in order to get something that you deem necessary in the game. I hate that. I've always hated that. I hated that in school. I hate forced group stuff. It's just, I know it's an MMO, but don't make my achievements dependent on some other Yahoo. I don't like that. I never have, and I never will.
All right. Talking about stats and benefits now, the change is that if you have the combat tier 1 cape, you would gain a passive plus 11 armor, plus 3 prayer bonus, and plus 5 to each style at all times. And we already talked that this will potentially be split between tier 1 and tier 2 combat. Once again, back to the idea of having these combat stats come from a dedicated combat cape. So we've been over that. In regards to comp games, okay, good. Yes, highlight that these names are not final. They'll have nicer names than skill or tier one, and we're just using them for clarity at the moment. Voila. All right. Good.
Which is what we figured, but
yeah,
I'm sure there's a large portion of people that didn't probably realize that.
And that's the changes for the document.
So, I mean, not a lot of changes, but there were some
little tiny ones.
Mm-hmm.
And now the question is this enough to make people happy about it?
No. No. Someone is going to be mad no matter what they do. There is no way to do this without pissing someone off. Honestly, I think the best solution is the solution that we talked about last week. And I think people can actually even hear that on its own, can't they, Shane?
Yeah, we split that out as one of our new nibble features, which we'll talk about in just a little bit. But the gist of the situation is take the passives off the cape, put them on the person,
mm-hmm.
make the cape's cosmetic when you unlock an achievement, and have combat stats come from combat capes given out through either drops or combat game pieces of content, like a new kind of Rush of Blood or, heaven forbid, Dominion Tower.
Yeah. Well, how about this? If you come out with a new, big, crazy, awesome group boss, then the best cape in the game comes from that group boss that has a specific, something for groups. Whereas if you're going to fight, I don't know, what's the toughest, individual boss?
Telos
maybe?
Yeah.
Telos? Same thing. You could get a combat cape from Telos, same exact stats, but maybe it has an effect when you're, as an individual boss fight. I mean, there's other options than just a comp. And that's kind of what we were talking about,
Yeah. Yeah. All right. I don't know that I have much else to say on this. The changes are fairly minute. We'll have to see where we go with this. The biggest one, of course, was the cosmetics for people, and, it just makes sense to do that. And from the, I'm going to go out on a ledge and say, that tweet we talked about last week where ModJack posted that tier 1 lore is the quest cape, tier 3 lore is the master quest cape, where he posted that as a tweet. I am willing to bet that the intention there was to say that through the unlock mechanics and the way it actually looks is what was meant. And we now have clarification of that in the doc. So I think these doc changes are relatively minor given that.
Yeah, I think so too. And, I'm really curious to how this is going to play out because I'm not sold either way.
Because it's a change, but it's not a big change.
Yeah, and for so long we've been saying that sometimes they need to take the ball and run, and is what we've been calling for this long going to come back and bite me right on the ass? and it might. It might. I don't know.
Yeah.
It's like, no, we mean that. Just not in this case.
Yeah.
No, I don't know though. I mean, I'm fine with the skilling part of it. I don't know about the combat part. And I want to know what kind of effects are they going to, what kind of passives will we get for skilling? Yeah, that's what I'm really,
you know, it'd be nice
about.
For that.
I want to know that.
Would be to make the Saren spirit drops not utter garbage.
That would be good. I would love to see something like
you know,
you could
let me be honest with you. I'm tired of getting rune arrowheads. I'm tired of getting diamonds. I don't mind the half keys. Those are good.
Oh, you don't know about the rune arrowheads, huh?
What about them?
They're not worthless.
Oh?
Yeah, no. Sell those. They're worth more than what you'd think.
Why? What do people use them for?
I don't know. But it is a viable money-making method for an alt account. So
okay.
It has right. to be, someone must be using it.
All right, fair enough.
Yeah.
I will take that comment back.
Yeah, I was just talking about that the other night when I was going over some stuff, actually. So, yeah.
All right.
You know what I would like to see? Store an inventory of urns on your cape.
Ooh.
Wouldn't that be great?
Ooh, that'd be interesting.
Oh, man. I mean, because everywhere you go, you got them, you know? I mean, or you should if you're trying to be efficient. And that'd just be perfect, you know? Throw some urns on there.
Nice.
Load them up, you know?
Unfortunately, I don't have any ideas on this right here. So. All right. Let's walk over some more paths that we walked over last week. There's a section that was split out from the, live stream this week. And this is one of the few things, everything else in the live stream seemed like we've already heard it before, but, in one of the chat questions, that was asked, to Mod Shani, it was about stone spirits. And of course we've been talking about those a lot here on the podcast, you know, because they were the ore replacement drop with the mining and smithing rework. And we actually talked about those last week as well in terms of what should be done with those. And that's also on a nibble. But when it comes down to it, the core of the problem with the stone spirits is that too many people are mining because you can AFK mine. And that's creating an influx of ore in the game, making the ore worthless and making smithing worthless. And that's, they feel that's why stone spirits are also worthless, is because the ore is so cheap, therefore the stone spirits are going to be cheap as well. Because, you know, you can already mine effectively enough that these stone spirits just give you double ore. And in fact, they might actually be contributing to the problem, so much so that we talked about last week that Elder Rune is at its elk value, which is just downright depressing after this update. So it was mentioned in the stream that they're working on a redesign for Stone Spirits to fix this. They're going to take their time with it. They're going to be thoughtful. And it's actually possibly also going to touch smithing too in order to make smithing valuable.
You know, I want them to be very, very careful with this because I feel like it's almost a situation where they're a victim of their own success.
Yeah.
And I really think they were on the right track. I really believe in the design. And there are ways to make money mining. You have to be smarter than the average bear and try to figure them out. And they change. But maybe that's part, and you know, maybe that can be fun. You know, I'll talk about this one because it's kind of over now. But last week there was a mini gold rush in RuneScape, right? It was a legitimate gold rush because we had gold stone spirits coming in. And they're basically worthless. You could buy them for next to nothing. Gold is like a 40 level 40 rock, but yep. Concentrated gold, you can do it 80. That is five ores every swing of your pickaxe, like if you're at a high level, every time. So if you put that with your stone spears, that's 10 gold ore every time, right? The thing is, no one was doing it because it was so worthless, right? So all the people that trained their crafting by using gold jewelry couldn't get the gold that they needed for their jewelry. So
because people stopped mining it with the mining and smithing rework.
Yes. So if you were like, the ore was a decent price, but if you smithed it and turned it into bars, which if you're using your family crest gauntlets, that does 60 bars at a time. It deposits it directly into your ore bank, and it was going for about 1,000 a piece. So, yeah. It was comparable to divination for about a week.
Of a gold bar on the GE is currently 776.
Yeah, it's going back down, but
but with that being said, if we look at a 90-day average, the 90-day average for gold is 636.
Mm-hmm.
And in case you're wondering where I'm pulling all these up, we do have something called the Grand Exchange Portfolios at RSBNB. Any item in the game going back all the way to the beginning, the last 3,950 days, we have price history for ever since these things started being tracked. And we have little sliders where you can choose, you know, what is the history of that you want to see. Like, for example, last year, average gold price, 462 for a gold bar.
There you go. So, I mean, it's kind of a blip on the radar in a way, but those are the things that I think you have to seek out if you're trying to make money mining. And you just got to realize that people play a lot, and people that don't play other games most of the time have more than one account. Once something like this gets out, everyone rushes to it. So there is a window of opportunity.
Yeah.
So, you know, I mean,
do you want to hear the exact clip from the stream?
Yeah. That's what I want to hear.
Let me pull that up.
Wait, did he say what they're doing?
Okay. So bear with me, everyone. Let me just load something up here. Power of the phone. have a little update on Stone Spirits to tell you. So let me just read out what I have been sent to make sure that I'm on point. Okay. So when it loads. So yes, obviously we acknowledge that there is a problem with Stone Spirits. We're past double XP weekends, and you know the value of Stone Spirits, the ores and bars haven't picked up. There is a problem, of course, with smithing as well. You have recalled from the stream last week when I spoke to Monchak about this, he identified there was a problem with smithing, and it's kind of inherent to this.
Mm-hmm.
And as of the moment, we are currently working on a design to fix this. But as a note, I got to make this very clear, we do need to take our time on this because we do not want to screw this up, create even more problems to go with it. But yes, there is a design being worked on to try and sort out the issue with Stone Spirits. So I'm hoping that gives you some.
They said after double XP weekend. And that's what I said we're going to need to wait and see on. And here we are.
Right. Well, and I mean, it really didn't say anything other than we know we're looking at it.
And it's at the design phase.
Something.
And, you know, let's be honest, it's going to be premature to share the design at that stage.
Yeah, I'm hoping that it's something along the lines of what we talked about last week.
Yeah, that'd be good. That'd be good.
Question.
Though they're attacking it from the smithing angle, which is good. Both that would be the demand side of the equation on ores. I think we said that smithing felt okay, though, in terms of usefulness. Because, yeah. I mean, there's masterwork armor, and we would have liked to have had more, but the combat types said no.
Yeah, if they're attacking it from a smithing side, then I hope it's what we talked about, you know, allowing being able to make Well, some kind of a salvage for parts.
That would be supply side, though, because you'd be putting the stone spirits away. Whereas if they were attacking it from the smithing side, they would need to make more bars used, therefore increase the demand.
Yeah,
increase the demand of smithing rather than decrease the amount of stone spirits in game.
Well, I guess, I mean, I don't know, either way. I can tell you what I don't want to happen. I don't want them to mess around with mining. We just got it. Don't break our new toy.
Mining's pretty good.
Mining is good, and I don't want this getting screwed up. Because I don't know. I believe in it. There are problems that I'm not sure they are thinking about when it comes to the stone spirits and the mining and stuff like that. Such as we're at a point in the game now where you can't look. I've come to the realization that we can make skilling better for money, but we're never going to have it be good money. And there's a few reasons for that, but one reason in particular, I think, is because for a casual player, you're not going to be able to there's just no way to do it. I mean, the way people make money with skilling is by having 2, 3, 4 accounts. That's how you do it. You might think, 800K an hour, that's nothing. Yeah, it's nothing, unless you have 4 accounts doing it. Now it's something. Now here's the thing, is that really a bad thing? It's bad for the casual player. Is it bad for Jagex? No. That's 4 memberships.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So like...
And let's also remember that accounts are allowed to freely share with each other.
Yeah, I would, you know, and that's why I think at some point, rather than all of this stuff on the sides that I'm not sure will really work, maybe we need a system that brings our accounts together. One account to rule them all. Where you had your...
We talked about this with the name change system. It would be great, but I recall the exact... It was Mod MMG, the CEO at the time, who brought in the name change system. And he said that, you know, they would have liked to have gone this way, but it just would have been too much of an upending of the legacy system to do that.
Well, maybe. Maybe not. They didn't have NXT then, and they had all old Java spaghetti, right? So, I mean, I don't know. This is more your area than mine. I'm just saying that.
I don't think NXT would factor into it. That's more on the rendering
side. It doesn't? Okay. Yeah. Okay. Well, regardless, there's not a ton that you can do when you have people that are providing resources. And this is a natural result of having any AFK skilling
method. It's also
method.
A natural result
doesn't matter
of
what it is. Mobile is going to make this... bigger, right? The ship, look, the genie's out of the bottle, guys. You know, I mean, you can't put the toothpaste back in the tube. This is kind of the way it is right now, and I don't see any way to turn back the clock on that. What you can do is going forward, the money-making skilling will need to come from active gameplay.
And we kind of alluded to this on last month's bit with the sheer amount of money that runecrafting can make.
Yeah, and there no alts are doing runecrafting runs, right?
Let alone mud runecrafting.
No. See, what you would do is if you were going to do that, then you're probably doing AFK on your main, and then you're going to send your alt out there to do the runecrafting runs. But for the most part, you're playing active, right?
Yeah.
And I think that is where the sweet spot is. So, you know, is mining not going to be worth a lot of money? Probably not. But it's AFK, and we really like it, so let us have it. And, you know, something like runecrafting, it is the way it is. Don't make it any different. You know, like, let that be the example of how you have high GP versus then the high question active is, gameplay.
Is the current RuneScape wiki estimated of 6.8 million GP an hour for crafting mud runes acceptable for high intensity?
I think so. I mean, that's pretty good, right?
Yeah, it is.
I mean, that's pretty good. I mean, think about it. If you were like, you know, some things on your way to 5.4 bill, some stuff is AFK, right? There's just nothing you can do about definitely. That. And so, like, if your main is over there doing AFK, at least you could be doing something on another account, you know, or something. I think that's perfectly fair if you're playing. And I think that for AFK, I think 800K an hour, that's fine. If you want to multiply that by 3 or 4, wonderful. That's healthy. That's good for the game. It's good for Jagex to make the money. It's good for the bonds. It's actually good for most people. It's just not good for the casual player that has one account and it happens to be a skiller.
Yeah.
That's who gets hurt. Yes. I mean, and I'll be upfront. That is true. It's 100% true. But I don't know how you can ever go back now. You
and
know?
When are we going to have a chance to talk a little bit more about this, dare we ask?
Well, it depends on when it can be up, but I've actually got an article ready to go. And I'm just waiting on a few little knickknacks, a few little pictures here and there, and should be in your hands tomorrow evening. So,
all right. Yeah. You'll find that at informer.rsbnb.com probably by the time you're listening to this. It's certainly an interesting discussion. So, alrighty. Stone Spirits. Who knew that something like that we'd still be talking about with mining and smithing? So, and you know, I'm just going to actually interject on this and take a bit of a brief detour before we move on, and I'll say that even the essences like Praiselic and Malevolent Essence,
mm-hmm.
For the Masterwork armor, those are selling well below market price. The market price for, I believe it was the Praiselic, is around 13 mil. I bought one for under 10.
I should have waited.
And the Malevolent is, you know, under, is like 2. So.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I'm not surprised about the Malevolent because you can, I mean, rots are quick and people like to do them. Mechs is a little bit more of it's still, but you know, it takes longer and stuff, but
yeah.
That's not bad. I want to say I paid like 12 or 13 maybe when I got my 8, because it took me a while to save up the money for them.
That's what I've been working on. So, nonetheless, I think that's a good point. To leave that discussion where we're at.
Yeah. Who would have thought it would be Stone Spirits?
The Malevolent, Malevolent Essence is the one that is around 2 or 3.
Mm-hmm.
So. All right. Moving on from that, you know, we'll talk about a couple of our listener questions in just a bit, but just got a couple of other little important things to mention. First and foremost, we're running something new called the RSBNB Update Nibble. And what this is, and you know, you might laugh at the name, what we've effectively done is we have decided that we're going to split out the best bits of RSBNB Update. And the reason for this is that we fully understand that our podcasts are, you know, on average between an hour and a half to 2 hours plus some weeks, depending on the content. And sometimes people just want the best of RSBNB Update each week. Well, we have that now in the form of the RSBNB Update Nibble, which you can find on our YouTube channel at youtube.com/RSBNB. And there, each week we will split these out. And last week's nibbles were covering Stone Spirits, the Comp Cape rework, our solution to that, and Onyx removal and Dragonstone mining. So all of these and more can be found on the YouTube channel at youtube.com/RSBNB. And if you're wondering why it's called the nibble, here's why. So we have the weekly bite. We also have the monthly bit. In hindsight, those two names should have been swapped around, but they came out with us at different times. So in computer programming, a byte is represented by 8 bits, okay? And this is just an abstract concept internally that you can think of. And a nibble is half a byte or 4 bits. So we thought we have the bit, we have the byte. What don't we have? We don't have the nibble. So here we are, the RSB update nibble. If that's the explanation behind that name, if anybody was wondering where it came from. So, and Tanis, you know, we had some good fun when we were messaging back and forth this week, didn't we?
We did. My Siri is such a naughty girl. She did not think I said nibble.
And you can guess where this went. Just swap out two of those letters that are repeated in there, and you have the answer. So.
Yep.
All righty. So we're going to talk about Patreon right now. I actually have an announcement in regards to this, but first I'll take a moment and thank our Patreon supporters for this week of the podcast. This week we have Ben W., Brock H., Diana, Kyle, Tom V, and Zez. Thank you all of you for your support and everything that you have done with supporting this podcast. It truly means the world to us, and we are very thankful for your support on Patreon. So thank you very much. Thank you.
Yes, thank you. I love seeing that. I love to see every new name. It makes me smile.
Indeed it does. Indeed it does. And if you want to find out more about this, just head on over to patreon.com/RSBNB, and there we offer 3 tiers of support where you can support the podcast. For $1 a month, you get access to our show notes before we record the show. You get a special mention in the show notes. You also have the ability to join in our roundtable discussions whenever we do them. Also, you get to vote on topics for the monthly bit, which I'll talk about in just a moment. If you want to go up to $3 a month, you'll receive a special VIP rank on Discord, a mention on the podcast at the start of the month, and high-quality stereo AAC versions of the show. And for $5 a month, you'll get the shout-out each and every week on the podcast, as well as exclusive access to the outtakes we use for the clip show at the end of the year. And I can also say that for all Patreon supporters, we are actually adding in early access to the nibbles on Saturday or Sunday, depending on how timing goes, and then the rest of them will be released to the YouTube population and the general public throughout the week, so you guys gain early access to the nibbles on the show after the podcast goes out. So that'll be available to all Patreon supporters starting this week. We put them out to everybody this week because we wanted to run them as a trial balloon to see how they would do, and they did great. So we're going to make these a Patreon exclusive for the first couple days, and then they'll go out on the regular YouTube channels after that. But we also do our monthly bit bonus show, which we record at the end of every month, and this will focus on a key issue towards the RuneScape community, and these are released to Patreon supporters exclusively. And now, going forward, these will be voted on by you guys, the Patreon supporters. And I think that's a good way of doing it, because that, you know, throws it back to you guys, the community, who are supporting us and who love the show. Makes sense. You guys should have a stake in deciding what gets produced for this content. So we're doing that going forward. And I can report that the monthly bit for the month of March will be the next skill. And this is something that we did in our last brainstorming session. I think Sirion suggested this one, the next skill. So we'll have a bit of a wide-ranging discussion on what we'd like to see for the next skill in RuneScape. I know that's a long way off, but it's something I think that would be an interesting thing to spend an hour or so discussing. So that'll be the March monthly bit. We're also doing our Inside RSBNB update tier at the end of every month, which will include an interview with our host. Tanis, you're up this month, so you're going to have a chance
to learn
a bit about yourself. And
I think those are going to be so fun.
Yeah, because we're going to get to expand it out to everyone. You know, Sirion, Tycho, yeah. Parnassius, David, everybody who takes part in producing this might even be able to draft Earth into doing one.
I'm looking forward to learning more about everybody too. So it's cool. I'm so happy we hit that tier.
Yes,
so happy.
Me too. And when we reach $50 a month, we'll be doing the roundtable on the first Saturday of each and every month, where you'll have the ability to join us in Discord for a roundtable discussion on anything and everything RuneScape related, and Patreon supporters will have a chance to participate in that, while these will be streamed live and later published. And finally, should we reach $99 a month, that'll be Movie Night with Shane and Tannis, which will include our favorite movies, Star Trek, of course, and who knows what else. So,
zoom, zoom.
Oh boy.
Zoom.
Oh boy. Oh boy. Anyways, so all this and more can be found at patreon.com/rsbnb. So thank you once again to everybody who is supporting us on this podcast. It truly means the world to us.
Yeah, thanks, guys. I don't know about you, Shane, but it feels so good to know that people appreciate the work you do. Like,
indeed.
It just makes you feel really good.
All right, so that's the nibble and Patreon. We can move on to our questions right now. We do have two questions this week. So first one from the RR Man. Do you like my idea for Onyx Dust? And are you surprised that they stuck to the ban? No, it's not a nerf. It's a ban. Jagex literally has Onyx Dust in the game already. Just give out some of that dust at a reasonable balanced rate in the Pristinus Gem Rocks, and you literally have the means to balance it down to the gram. Thanks, the RR Man. Or cheers, the RR Man, rather. What do you think? Do you think they could give Onyx Dust?
Yeah. All right. Man, I hate to do it because, I mean, you know, I like the RR Man, but I got to stick a pin in this bubble. If I had my way, they would remove that as well. I think that the Onyx is pretty ruined, and the only way to really make that better would be to remove the dust as well. And I know PVMers will howl and cry, and they don't want that. And you know, if we can't get rid of it, then maybe that would be a solution. But honestly, I don't think we can, because we have now seen repeatedly that people will run to whatever the best moneymaker AFK method is that week.
And crush it.
And crush it, yes. And so even though you could balance it to the gram, you can't account for all the people that will rush to it. I mean, even the best of the best couldn't anticipate that. I mean, you know, example, mining. And so I think we'd just be better off to take the dust out altogether. But that's my opinion.
You need 100 Onyx Dust and 250 incandescent energy to create an Onyx. And doing the math on that, the current price of Onyx Dust is 12.5K each. So that gives us 1.25 mil. For an Onyx, which is even less than the market price of an actual Onyx. You know, this is such a complicated problem. It alks for 1,080,000 GP. Like, I'm going to have to say that it either needs to go, or it needs to be removed from all these potential combat drops as well, because, you know, looking at the drop table here for an uncut Onyx, let's see where we can get an uncut Onyx into game. And this is from the trusty RS wiki. Hurricane, Arachne, a Raptor Key. Okay, that's a question. Next, Angel of Death. That's an uncommon one. Solak, 1-3 noted, uncommon. Metamorphic Geodes, 1/140. Okay. Blackstone Dragon, rare. Dragonstone Dragon, rare. Calgarian Demons, all the way down to the Ambassador, rare. And you see what we have here. The only potential common Onyx dropper is of course the fight kiln thing, which is as intended, right?
Oh, it should be. Yeah. If you're getting your onyx from the fight kiln, I'm so sorry. Something has went wrong in your life, and I feel really bad for you. Yeah, man. I mean, that's 30-40 minutes.
Yeah.
To get it, and not the most pleasant of fights.
Yeah. Araxor is a 1 out of 17 drop, and that's 2 of them. And Araxor is a pretty tough solo boss. So, you know, looking at what we have here, most of these drops are on the rare side. And as much as I like to say that the skilling side is underrepresented, I do have to say that I think that what we saw from skilling, it was part of the devaluation of it. So I'm...
Oh, without a doubt.
Yeah, definitely.
I mean, that's without a doubt. You know what, though? I would venture to make him a little bit more rare on some of the things like Araxor.
Yes.
Because...
Yes.
You know, Araxor was supposed to have this mechanic of enragement that keeps people, from camping it. They don't keep people from camping that. They camp the crap out of that boss. So I don't know. I would probably make it more rare, honestly.
I actually have a theory and an idea on this, and I think skillers would be very happy about this.
I would say
Hydrix, as it is right now, can only come from the Reaper shop, right? Like you need to buy the incomplete Hydrix and combine it with an Onyx from the Reaper shop in order to make a Hydrix gem, which is super expensive, super expensive.
Yep.
So my suggestion, if we want to do this for Onyx, is that you leave it in the fight kiln or fight cave or purchase it with Tokel, like if you hate your life or something like that you mentioned. And then remove it from all these combat. Remove Onyx from all these combat creatures. All of them. Okay.
Okay.
And then remove Onyx Dust from the elite dungeons. All of them. Then what you do after that is, you go forward with the Onyx Dust suggestion from the Prif Gem Rocks, but there's two big caveats. It has to be rarer, and I say rarer, I mean rarer, than what we had before for Onyx, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And, you ready for this one?
Okay.
You can only mine it on Traherne Hour.
Ooh, I like that. Ooh, actually, I like that. I like that suggestion.
And they could even make it the same kind of random feature that that they did for the Animica rocks on Traherne Hour, and make it in such a way that that adds to the rarity.
Yeah, just pop a gem rock down and where the Traherne district would be fine, right?
Yeah,
that's actually a pretty good solution.
Because the reason for this, and the reason I am going with this solution, is because we have already a gem that you can exclusively only get from combat, and i.e. Reaper points, the uncut Hydrix, or the incomplete Hydrix, rather, right?
Mm-hmm.
So my idea on this is that if we have a gem we can get just from combat, why don't we have a gem that we can just get from skilling?
Yeah, I think that's fair. Now,
it would go up. It would be a lot more rare. And I think a big picture that everybody is missing from this that I touched on last week is that you have items like the Grace of the Elves and the Luck of the Dwarves that rely on alchemical onyx. You have them being governed by the price of treasure hunter or treasure trail items.
Yeah. Well, and all your duff jewelry has to be recharged with onyx. So there's that too.
And
you know, actually, that's good.
And the reason why I think this is good, it's a good compromise. It's a good. I don't think it'll be a moneymaker. It might be a moneymaker over time, but it's a good update for skillers.
Yeah, Yeah, I think it would be a decent update. Yeah, I think it would be decently fair. It would even give people a choice of what to maybe what they want to mine on Turn Hour, whether they want to do the Animica or a Gemrock. Because I'm assuming it's going to take, how much dust did you say it takes for an Onyx?
100 right now.
100. So you wouldn't be able to make an Onyx even in an hour.
No.
It'd probably take a couple Trehearn hours.
I'd say limit the amount of dust you get per hour to somewhere between 5 and 10.
Oh, that's even more rare than I was thinking. I thought more along the lines of like 25, so maybe
it would take about four hours. No, that's too many.
Okay, well, so you couldn't even make one a day. You'd have to make one every 2 or 3 days. You'd be looking at.
Yeah, and you know, maybe that's too rare, but I don't have numbers on it, and that's just my initial knee-jerk reaction.
Well, I mean, I like the all the underlying, you know, principles of it. It actually makes sense to me. Here's the bad part. PVM will never stand for it.
You got Hydrix instead. Make Hydrix jewelry. Make some new Hydrix jewelry for them.
I know, but they... Mm-mm. They won't have it.
And I just want to point out that onyxes in general are formed deep within volcanoes, right? As we know.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So how we got things dropping onyx in-game outside of the Tazar area is always going to be a question up for me. And it should have just stayed there in the beginning. And we would have avoided this whole problem from the beginning. So,
yeah, I mean... You know, I think they would have had to done something the addition of Death's Jewelry using Onyx, right? Because that would have just been too.
Yeah, it would have been too.
It would have been too rare. But
that should have been an update focused around crafting and not treasure trail items. And
yes.
It's focused around treasure trail items right now. If we bring it back to this side of skilling, make it a skilling only gem, we can make it about crafting.
Yeah.
So
I agree.
So I guess that's a good idea from the RR man, and I just took it and ran with it a bit more. So
yeah, you just kind of massaged it a little bit. I mean, that's what you do, you know. And I stuck a pin in it. Oh, it's bad. Sorry. Oops.
All right, this next one is from a guest we had on the show at the tail end of February, and Mod Porky writes us back. If you had to come up with an April Fool's update for RS3, what would it be?
You got one, Shane?
I know you have one, so I'm going to tell you to go first.
Oh, this would – oh, man, this would make – oh, it would make everybody so mad, but it would be so worth it. Just switch – the RS3 and OSRS login screens for just that day. So when you were logging in, you think you're logging into RS3, but when you pull it up, it looks like OSRS, and then you get in the game, and everything is in legacy. It's the legacy everything.
And even turn all the textures off and everything like
yes.
that, too.
Could you imagine? Could you imagine how?
No, we did get rid of fixed window mode a couple weeks ago, so you can't go all the way back.
Well, but we could go pretty far. And could you imagine how mad the OS people would be if they logged in and their screen looked like RS3? Which you probably couldn't do, but boy, that would be funny if you could. Dude, they'd be screaming like they would be like, "Oh my dude!" They'd be so mad. It'd be so funny. It'd be so funny. And Jagus would be like, just kidding. Yeah, that's my idea.
All right.
I think it'd be great.
Oh, boy. That's a real kicker. I have two. I have one for RS3. My one for RS3, and I'd hope... I've never said this on the show before, and I hope I don't give anyone any horrible ideas. But as it works in China, for many games, if you want something, you pull out the credit card and you just buy it. What if there was an April Fool's joke that said you could buy 99s?
See, I like that because that'll make people mad. That's what makes it good. We have a treasure hunter promotion, 99s. New treasure. That's what it should be, a new treasure hunter promotion, 999.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. And, you know, hence why I said I hope no one ever does this.
Yeah, I would hope not, but it would be funny on April Fool's.
And, you know, I think the beauty of what we both suggested is that they're very simple.
Yeah. Yeah. No, they're very simple, and just to see the reaction from people would be priceless.
And my old school one is two pronged. Old school is getting treasure hunter. and an evolution of combat.
Yes, they log in and there's an action bar. I love it. I absolutely love it.
And the best part is you could do it even with a news post and some quick mock-ups.
Yeah, that would be so good. That would be enough right there. It would be so good. Oh, it's a good thing that does Jagex still have a tank outside?
No, left. That left.
Oh, that's too bad. They probably need one after they did it. That would be so funny. It'd be worth it.
Oh. And it's also worth noting that old school updates typically ship on Thursdays. April Fool's this year is Monday. But Treasure Hunter promotion days are Thursdays as well. So.
Yeah. It wouldn't matter, man. It'd still get them.
Yeah, it would.
It'd still get them. Oh, treasure. Either one. I would love to see an action bar. Oh, my God. We need an older school. Look what they did.
And you know, the funny part is there have been news releases in the last year and a bit that I thought were actually April Fool's intended. Like Mark Zuckerberg tech news a few weeks ago.
Oh, God. Privacy. Yeah. Yeah.
All right. I think that's it. That's enough questions for today. So thank you to the both of you for submitting your questions. If you guys want to send your own, you can email them to questions@rsbnb.com, or you can leave us a DM or mention us on Twitter @rsbnb. All right. You ready to take a step into the future?
Oh, yeah. Let's go to the holodeck.
This week, Google announced something called Project Stadia. And, you know, they start off with some rather boilerplate in this posting here, saying for 20 years, Google's worked to put the information at your fingertips, yada, 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 through our data centers and network capabilities. Now we're using that technology to change how you access and enjoy video games. So Stadia is going to be a video gaming platform over the cloud that will deliver instant access to your favorite games on any type of screen, whether it's a TV, laptop, desktop, tablet, or mobile phone. The goal is to make these games available in resolutions up to 4K at 60 FPS with HDR and surround sound. This will be launching later this year in select countries, including the US, Canada, the UK, and much of Europe. And, you know, we've talked about game streaming like this before. I don't think there's anyone ever as big as Google to do it.
No, you know, I think we saw this coming, right? I mean, it was
only there's some rumors last eventually... week, but we didn't really we didn't want to.
Yeah, well, not like jump. Not Google in particular, okay. But like just you know, the eventuality that it was probably going to have some kind of a cloud gaming service. And I know that I've talked on the show before about the PS Now was you know, that for me it worked really well. You know, and this is going to be a whole new thing for people that don't have big, beefy, you know, gaming computers. They don't need them now. We're talking 4K, 60 frames a second, and they have a controller. Man, you can play these things on your on a tablet.
Yeah, like, it's or crazy. Even just Chrome.
Yeah, yeah. Like, you know, I think. It's definitely going to give people a choice, or whether they go with, you know, PC, console, or now even a cloud service.
Or a Mac.
We're talking about gaming, Shane.
I know, but with this, you could do it on a Mac.
Oh, you could, couldn't
because
you?
Because all you need is Chrome.
Holy crap. I never even thought about that. That's true. So I think... Like, this is really exciting, and I think as long as you have a good, you know, internet connection, it'll be great. Now, if you don't, it's probably not for you. But it definitely could bring in choice and open up some means. The question for me is, how is it going to be monetized? Are we talking a subscription model? Are we talking buying games and having them on? And this is like the service. We're talking like a Steam type of thing. That's what I want to know next, because that's the big question. And yeah. If it is a subscription, then okay, what's the library going to be like?
Right.
How's that going to work?
You know, one of the games they did say is Assassin's Creed Odyssey. That's the only one that they've really mentioned in the news posting here as well.
Yeah, I think that's because they had actually tested that one, yeah. Right? Like that was their beta testing. Yeah.
Yeah. Also, just some numbers here. Xbox One X, 6 GPU teraflops, PS4 Pro 4.2. They say Stadia will be able to come in at 10.7 teraflops in terms of graphics processing power.
Isn't that crazy? That is crazy. Like, to not need the hardware that we need now to, like, to play stuff, you know, the way it's meant to be played, like, wow.
Yeah.
Like, people, does this, oh wait, no, never mind. That's a whole another discussion for another day, but yeah, Google, man. If anyone has the resources and the ability to do this, boy, I would think they could.
Yeah. Apparently Interpol also has the resources to do this as well. Interpol has something called Project Stadia, aiming for launch in 2022, is to create a center of excellence to help Interpol countries in planning and executing policing and security preparations for hosting major international sporting events.
I was like, wait, what? Interpol? What the? What are we talking about the police for? Like,
okay. Well, I was just Googling Interpol, and that also came up.
All right.
But yeah, I mean, I've never used any cloud gaming services, so I don't know exactly how well they work. I can still run the games that I play at 60-plus FPS on my computer. I have a GTX 1060, but given the cryptocurrency boom, that cost me around $400, and that's, you know, effectively the first prosumer GPU. It's because it's not even a 1070 or a 1080.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, the cryptocurrency really screwed things up for gamers. But yeah, you won't have to worry about that. Pretty much, we're just going to need a computer that works. Now, there are some caveats here, right? Because, especially in the US, most of our ISPs suck.
Yeah.
Our internet is not good. And this would maybe put pressure on them to have to, but I mean, think about it. Like, you know, we have all the worst things you can have. We have sucky speeds, data caps, all that stuff. And some like I'm saying, somebody could like meet their cap in, you know, hours streaming 4K gaming, you know, like that's it's gonna add up.
We're actually fairly lucky here with our cable providers. We get 300 down, 15 up, no data cap.
See, we just, well, you know how the U.S. is. They let companies just do whatever the hell they want. And, but it might take something like this to get enough of an uproar, a public uproar of like, hey, this ain't enough. We don't know. We're done with data caps, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Maybe that will change it. But yeah, that is something to
Or even Google Fiber. You know.
Google Fiber would be great.
Yeah. Yeah. Assuming you live in that area. So.
Oh, you know, we forgot one of the really cool aspects of Stadia here, man, is it's tied with YouTube, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's Google owns YouTube.
Mm-hmm.
So you can actually be watching
someone playing their direct game, and you don't need to have the bandwidth to stream it because it knows what's happening in the Stadia data center, can just send it out on a YouTube stream.
And they're actually going to have a button that you can click on and join that streamer in his game.
Mm-hmm.
Instantly.
There's also buttons on the controller that they have with this to create an instant capture as well at full resolution. The controller also has Google Assistant built in and a built-in microphone. And the controller doesn't actually connect to your computer. It connects over Wi-Fi directly to Google.
Yep. And that's really... Yeah, that's really cool. I think the potential on the multiplayer side of things is huge. Like, I think on a multiplayer level, and I'm not a big multiplayer gamer, but they can shove thousands and thousands of players together with this. You were talking fully destructible, just everything.
Ooh,
like this,
the ultimate,
you know what I'm
battle
saying?
Royale.
Yeah. I mean, this could...
Or the ultimate Rocket League bumper cars match.
Well, yeah. You know, I mean, it was... There's a lot to this. Like, if someone is going to make this work, I really think Google could do it. We'll see.
You know, this is a very interesting move because we're widely expected to have Apple come out next week with a streaming service announcement for the TV side of it, to watch TV shows and movies. So Apple is moving to services, but Google has always been a services company. And then they're adding in these extra services, Stadia being one of them. But also with this, Google is branching out into hardware as well, and you have this controller. And I think the controller is the biggest part that people are going to be connecting with on this. So mm-hmm. it's an interesting role reversal, Google focusing on hardware, Apple focusing on streaming services. So we'll have to wait and see how this pans out. But you know, it has the potential to be hugely disruptive because I think when you have the PS4 Kinect or whatever it was and the NVIDIA one, those are good, but they have the branding of a GPU company on them and they don't necessarily understand it to the – they do understand, but they don't understand to the level that Google does on how to do this kind of thing effectively.
Yeah, exactly. And – like I said, my experience with the PS Now was really good. So if they're able to, and I would expect that Google can take it, you know, just to a whole nother level. And, you know, that would be good. And the, you know, speaking of the controller, you don't really know until you hold a controller, but it looks like it would be pretty comfortable and a pretty good controller. Like I said, you don't really know until you hold it, but I have high hopes for it.
Indeed. Indeed. All right. Next up, talking about Battle Royales. Epic Games, the publisher of Fortnite, or rather the distributor of Fortnite, had a bit of a privacy issue that cropped up last Friday. Steam has suggested that it's that Epic's game launcher copies Steam user data, and Steam is very upset about this and said that they are going to investigate on this. Epic effectively had to respond to questions about what the launcher is doing under the hood, so much so that there were posts on Reddit and on the internet that found that Epic's game launcher is really reading things on your PC that it should not be. So much so that they found out that it was copying a Steam user data file called localconfig.vdf. Epic then confirmed that the launcher makes an encrypted local copy of your localconfig Steam file, but it insisted it only imports your Steam friends with your explicit permission. And the encryption they're doing on it isn't much encryption at all. It's basically flipping a few bits around that can easily be flipped backwards. So there is no encryption going on with this. And they say the information will only be sent to Epic if you choose to import your Steam friends, and then only hashed IDs of your friends are sent and no other information from this file. But Valve expressed concern, saying that we're looking into the information that the Epic launcher collects from Steam, and that the Steam client also locally saves data, such as the games that you own, your friends list, and saved login tokens. So if Epic is looking into, as they say, just your friends list, they could be looking into a whole other collection of stuff from your Steam file as well.
See, I feel like, because you do have to opt in, like I looked at that and I was like, I didn't do it when I first, when they opened the store and I was getting games and stuff. I saw that as a feature and I was like, nah, I don't want to do that. So I actually feel like this is much more could this be like a corporate espionage issue more so than on the user?
You've hit the nail on the head. The company that owns Epic is called Tencent, and they're based in China.
Well, there you go.
Also, interestingly enough, this week, Epic has announced a number of exclusives for its platform. So.
Oh, I didn't know Tencent was the ones that owned Epic.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, dude, they're huge then. Yeah. Wow. Okay.
Now Fortnite makes a whole lot more sense, doesn't it? It's just not just a flash in the pan.
Yeah. No, that makes a lot more sense now. Okay.
Yeah. So, you know, this is really murky. And I would say that if you're not actively playing Fortnite, or you don't have an interest in any of the games that are available on the Epic platform, uninstall the Epic Game Launcher. You don't need something like that on your computer reading these things. Granted, they say they only do it if you ask, but you know, there are enough question marks that you probably should uninstall it. All right, and our last piece of tech news circles back to something from last September from the Steam blog regarding user reviews. So a while back, they made a post that they were going to be changing the way reviews are calculated, and such that they only wanted players who had played the game to voice their opinions about the game, and that the summary of these opinions would be boiled down into a review score, and this should represent the likelihood that a future purchaser will be happy with their purchase. And since then, they say they've been listening to their feedback, and they want to value the player reviews highly, and they want to ensure that they're accurate and trustworthy. And developers also need them to communicate with their player base, and they're ready to make another big change on this. And what they're going to be doing is they're going to be identifying off-topic review bombs and removing them from the review score. So what this means is that if a game has a huge collection of people come in because the game developer does something they don't like and they negatively downvote it, that is what is called a review bomb. Steam will go out there, identify them that aren't the ones that are not legitimate, and remove them. So I think the Steam store needs to do this. Do we need more clarification on what a review bomb is, or does that make sense to you?
Oh no, I'm pretty aware of the review bombing, and I think this is good just because, it's not fair to the individual games that get caught up in this. I can remember one of the big examples that stick out to me is Grand Theft Auto V. You know, that game was so popular, was so highly rated, and because of a decision that Rockstar had made concerning mods at one point, they got review bombed, where people just, annihilated its rating, and it had nothing to do with the game whatsoever. And that's not right. It's not fair to that game. But it happens. And
yeah.
You know, we do need a way to get a company's attention. Like, that is true. And maybe that's through social media. You know, I'm not sure. But I don't think, you know, hurting other games is the way to do that.
Yeah. They define an off-topic review bomb as one is where the focus of those reviews is on a topic we consider unrelated to the likelihood that future purchasers will be happy if they buy the game, and hence not something that should be added to the review score.
Yeah, that's fair.
So I wonder if the GTA 5 one would have counted in that case.
You know, that would be really a gray area, right?
Yeah. Because in effect, you're still getting the core GTA 5, and it's going to work as intended.
Exactly. Well, and I mean, that's just real murky because Rockstar has this really weird take on mods. They don't care, but the owner of their company does care, and it's. You know, I'm sure you have your own opinions on mods and stuff.
Yeah, but, I do. Yeah. I don't like them.
I figured that was it. I think they can be a lot of fun, but don't screw them up.
Yeah. And once a review bomb is identified, they'll mark the time period it encompasses and notify the dev. And the reviews within that time period then will be removed from the calculation. And as before, the reviews themselves are left untouched. And if you want to dig into them and to see if they're relevant, you'll still be able to do so. To help with that, we've made it clear when you're looking at a store page where we've removed some reviews by default. And we further improve the UI around anomalous review periods.
That's good. And I'm glad they made this change because I use reviews a lot before I buy. I don't know. Do you use Steam reviews, Shane?
I don't buy much on Steam unless everyone else I know has already bought it. So in a way, I use the best reviews that exist, firsthand experience.
Well, that's true.
From people. Yeah. It's also worth noting that you can opt out of this by having these review bombs still be included in your store in the Steam store settings.
Okay, well, they're doing a little toggle escape too, then.
Yeah, and I think the fact they chose a default and they're running with it, it's good. And the fact if you want to see all the reviews and you want to have it the old way, it's only a review. So I think they made the right decision, especially for new purchasers. So.
Yep, agreeing.
All righty. Let us move on then. Instead of talking about the actual Skill of the Month progress this week, I want to actually talk a bit about some changes that we're contemplating for the future of Skill of the Month here. Because, Skill of the Month has run since November 2006, and it's been one competition each and every month. And in April 2007, we automated it, and since then, we both know that the amount of XP someone can get in RS has changed. Initially, the winners would get a few million XP. Now we have people getting tens of millions XP to the point where winners are being decided by who has more XP to go before they reach 200 million XP. And we don't like that. That's not a good skill of the month. So we want to make some changes to this. So I'm going to run through these right now, and I want the listeners to go to the forums at rsbnb.com/forums and comment on this or find the link in the show notes at update.rsbnb.com. We're going to run two competitions each month instead of one. Each one will run for a period of 10 days, and there'll be a cooldown period of a couple days before the next one begins. And you'll know what the competitions are when the month starts. There will be at most one combat competition per month. Constitution will be dropped as a possible contender, meaning it'll only be the big combat skills. And Slayer will also be grouped in as a potential combat skill as well. Number three, miscellaneous activities will be added to the basket of competitions possible. So this includes things like rune score, easy, medium, hard, or master clues completed, or maybe even something related to barbarian assault. And I'm fairly confident that changes number one and number two are simple to do and will be well received. I do want to hear feedback on number 3, and if you guys actually want these ones like RuneScore and Clue Scrolls in there in the basket that can be chosen from. And finally, when it comes to rewards for this, prizes. What would be an acceptable prize for winning a skilling competition of about 10 days long? And if we want to go down the prizes route, would you be willing to donate GP, in-game GP, to an RSBNB bank to purchase these prizes? We were initially going to bring these changes out for the April competition, but given that we're dealing with an almost 12-year legacy with this, it's probably best to post to figure out what's happening with this in advance. So what do you guys think about this? And I want to get everyone's opinion on this. So let's have a bit of a discussion about this, and we'll bring out the changes for the May competition. So do you have any thoughts on numbers 1, 2, or 3 right now?
You know, I actually think these will be great changes. I don't know if I'd throw the minigame in there, just because that requires teamwork.
Yeah, they're hard to play, and I thought of this after making the post, but Spotlight and all that, so.
Yeah, so other than that, no, and you know, really, right, even I would probably go even further from a donation standpoint. I would say I would have like a entry fee, $250K or whatever the number is. Let's say it's 100K.
$250K, 100K is actually pretty simple to enter in these competitions.
Exactly, you enter and then winner take all.
And it could even be an optional. Like it could even be an optional one too, maybe because. I've tried before. It's very hard to track people down at different time zones to get these. So,
that's the issue with that. Okay.
That's the issue with tracking down for an entrance fee. So,
okay. Well, I'm sure we can. We got a lot of smart people out there that can help us work this out.
Indeed. So, give us your feedback here on the post for that. Let's go through some achievements then, shall we?
Yeah, quite a few achievements this week. So let's go ahead and get started with Aaron3D. Got 99 farming on March 20th. There you go, Shane.
Nice.
Kinksy with 99 invention on the 19th. We have Captain Meta 4. Captain Meta 4. with 99 crafting March 18th. Captain Metaphor again with 99 hunter March 18th. Chaz 5100 with 99 farming on March 17th. Professional,
I think.
Professional. Okay, spelled a little different. With 120 fishing, nice, on March 17th. Chaz 5100, 99 fire making on the 17th. And Chaz 5100 again with 99 herb lore on the 17th. He is busy. And then we have The Quiver with 99 strength on March 17th. And Harlot Man with 99 fletching on March 17th.
Nicely done. Continuing on to March 16th, we have Jaguar 007 with 99 mining. Clean Tossels got 120 Slayer also on the 16th. Kinksy with 99 attack. Chaz 5100 with 99 strength. Kinksy also got 99 strength. Then we have Corrupt Pony with 99 farming. Congratulations. Moving on to the 15th, we have Prodigal Gaz with 99 constitution and 99 summoning. Blind Man 0122 with 99 invention on the 15th. And then Blind Man 0122 again with 99 farming on the 14th. And finally, Zookeeper 53, another 99 farming also on March 14th. So congratulations to everyone.
Very cool.
Nicely done.
Nice achievement.
Nicely done. All right. So those of you guys who are Patreon supporters would be aware of this from last week, but we also do here this week have a survey that we would very much like you guys to fill out. And what we have going on with this is that we want to basically see where a bit of our listener base is clustered. So we would very much like for you to head on over to our website at update.rsbnb.com/survey, or just find the links in the show notes. And when you're there, you'll find our RSBNB Update Spring 2019 survey. And we're asking kind of questions, some basic questions regarding the listener base and how our listener base looks when it comes to RuneScape stats and what kind of level of completionism you're at. Those questions are entirely optional if you don't want to fill those in. But we do also have a series of questions that we would very much appreciate your answers on regarding the content of the podcast, the future of the podcast, and why you listen, where you listen, that kind of thing, and also some questions about Patreon as well. So this is a survey we do about once every year or so, so we'd very much appreciate hearing from you guys on this and seeing what exactly you guys are thinking of RSBNB Update at this time. So if you would be so grateful to us and just fill this survey out at update.rsbnb.com/survey, we would be very pleased with that. So with that being said, once again, update.rsbnb.com/survey. We're looking forward to seeing the results. All right. So I think it's time for a pick of the week, right?
I think so. What do you got for us?
And I mentioned that when it came to these picks of the weeks, that I did have a couple that were just sitting there waiting and ready to go. And you know, I think this is one that you might not get much benefit out of unless you're a Star Trek fan. And the reason for that is because this is a very in-depth and perhaps lore-centric side of Star Trek, and it might not be for everyone if you're just passing by the series, but this is a book, or rather a series of books, called Star Trek Shipyards, Star Trek Starships, and the idea is that it provides a comprehensive outlook of pretty much all of the ships seen on screen, and it's split into two volumes. It's split from the in-universe years of 2151 to 2293, so specifically the Enterprise, Discovery, and Original Series era. And then the second one is 2293 through 2387. And it provides all kinds of things, such as stats of the ship, drawings, schematics, and provides a bit about the in-universe aspect of what they were used for, and specifically where they were used for and when they came online. And some of the – you can find highlighting of some of the famous ships that were actually used on TV screen. So this is going to be something that pretty much any Star Trek fan is going to get a good kick out of. And you know, when I saw this, in the very fact that they had the Discovery ships in here, that was actually pretty good because – you know, modern Star Trek is fast-paced and action-oriented when it comes to the space scenes. So you don't necessarily get to look and see what all the different starships were about in those first few episodes of Star Trek Discovery. Whereas if you look at The Next Generation, the shots are slower, so you can kind of take stock of that a bit more. But they also have really obscure ones. Like, for example, one of the temporal ships that only appeared in one Voyager episode, that's in the second volume of the 24th Century book. So this is two of them, and you can find it on Amazon. And if you enjoy Star Trek, this is something that you probably want to pick up.
Sounds cool.
Yeah. And, you know, multiple volumes, just full-colored pictures, nice presentation. Really great book and great value compared to what you can pay for some of the actual other hard copy or hardcover books rather out there. So
does it have all the ships? Does it have like the, you know, the Klingons and Romulans and Vulcans?
No, it's only the Federation side.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. I was just curious because there's so many cool ships.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, it's...
if you like ships, and this is going away from the pick, but this book does the Starfleet ones. But if you like ships and you like ships, the best place to actually interact with those is actually Star Trek Online. There's 590 yeah. starships in that game.
That's true, and you get one pretty quickly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Some of them cost a bit more, but they've done a good job in making ones free and available as the game has evolved. But anyways, that's the Star Trek Starships Encyclopedia. You can find it on Amazon or probably any other bookstore where you buy your books. So
nice.
All right. What have you been up to this week?
And I have been doing a lot of mining. A lot of mining. I've also been doing a lot of Slayer in my dungeon, because after our question last week, Parnassius was so kind to tell me that Chaos Giants are really good for herbs, so that's what I've been doing. I dropped them in my player-owned dungeon and just went to town, and so I do that. And I'm doing this I'm actually not doing it in anticipation for the incense sticks coming next week, but I'm actually doing this to save myself money on the next double XP weekend.
Yep.
So
yeah, that's and what throw I'm doing. Herb farming in there too.
Oh yeah, I've been doing that too. I try to do. I mean, I'm probably not as like Johnny on the spot as you are with your herb runs, but I'm trying to do two or three a day if I'm lucky. Now I'll do one when I get on, and I definitely will do one before I get off, and then usually sometime in the meantime.
All right. As for me this week on RS, I've just been at the Divine Charges, or rather the Incandescent Energy, harvesting Divine Charges, because I am still working on my Masterwork trims. I got them half done.
Nice. You'll get there.
Monetary value wise, I believe they're factoring everything in and the value of where they're at. Nobody sells the actual trim items, so you need to buy the essences, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. One of the essences, I believe it was Malevolent. I always get them mixed up. One of them yesterday was going for like 9 mil, and the other one was like 2. So we're looking at around 11 mil for one trim, and I got to do 6 more. So I need 66 more mil GP. And as a skiller, it takes time to harvest that kind of money.
It definitely does.
So, lots of farming runs, lots of divine energy gathering, but that's been pretty much me this week on that main. So, I believe that is it, unless you have anything else that you want to bring up.
Nope, that's all I got.
Alrighty, well, we'll be back next weekend to discuss the fire-making update, the fire-making spirits, and the fire-making quality of life, so that should be a very fun episode. So with that being said, we'll see you next week, everyone. You can join us in the meantime in our friends chat at BitsBytes, and we're also on Twitter at RSBNB. See you then, everyone. Take care.
See ya.